8th. And Brother Hyman passed around our handouts for today. I think this should be enough. But it's good to see everybody. I know it's been cold weather and a little bit of sorrow of heart. I know, Joy, we're praying for your son, and Carrie helped find some mold today in their home, so we can pray for Angel just to, you know, get the mold out of the house and not be sick. And so there's a lot of stuff going around, but I know it's a commitment to be here, but hopefully it'll be a blessing to you. This, I thought I would take just 1 week on Revelation 15. There's just 8 verses, but I went ahead and split it up into 2 parts. And the theme is this, these 7 golden vials. And so if we're in Revelation 15, I'll have somebody read just verse 1 for us, if they would. Revelation 15, 1. And we're a little over halfway through the book of Revelation.
So who? Another sign in the heaven, great and marvelous, 7 angels having the 7 last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God.
Yeah, so these 7 angels have these 7 vials, and they're full of 7 plagues. So it kind of reminds you of the Old Testament with the Exodus and the plagues of Egypt. And I had you put this word vials in your blank. It I know some translations have the word bowls, but our King James has the word vials. And so chapter 15, really through chapter 19, let's see if I can go back and find this one. Oops. No. Yeah, I think this was the chart that Jim created. And it's been a little bit of a guideline for, we said these first 3 chapters of Revelation talked about the church age, the 7 churches in these first, and then in chapter 4, we saw what we believe is the rapture of the church. God told John to come up hither, and so John, in the center, in the middle section of the book of Revelation, is what most of the book of Revelation is talking about. Is really, we think there's like 4 accounts of Christ's second coming. Just, I don't know if these line up with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but there's some of the, and we'll see next week more than some of the duplication of these things, but we're in this last section, and we're going to see these 7 vials poured out. And that's really where chapter 16 starts. But this week and next week, we'll finish up chapter 15. And then chapter 19 is where Christ returns at the Battle of Armageddon on the white horse, and the armies of heaven follow him. And so we're not going to be here during this time. We're at the judgment seat of Christ. We are seated together with him now. And so that's a little bit of an outline, I think, helps guide us as we go along here. But these 7 vials, if you look at your teaching point on your handout, so Christ came as a suffering Savior at His first coming, and He'll come back as a Davidic sovereign at His second coming. I like the way that said that. And just beforehand, there'll be some unprecedented developments here on planet Earth. And so these unprecedented developments are what we call the tribulation period, and they're probably the most talked about events and time. I had you put the word time in your blank. And I gave you an example of this. You know, just in my daily reading, I'm in the book of Psalms right now, and it's been really good. And I just gave you a couple verses on your handout of just a couple verses that I read in the book of Psalms this week. That first one there says, "Upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, and an horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup." And you guys remember, I drew this picture of planet Earth, and I also drew this picture. I don't know if this. This is like God's cup of wrath, and He is. He is getting ready to pour out His wrath on planet Earth. And we said that the Christian is not appointed to wrath because Christ, remember the night He died and He was betrayed, He says, He prays to God, "Let this cup pass from me, nevertheless not my will, but thine be done." And so it was not God's will for the cup to pass. So Christ drank of God's cup of wrath. And but ever since then, it's been God's been storing up wrath against this time to come. And so even in the book of Psalms, it talks about this, that God pouring out His wrath on people. And the other verse I put on there, "Oh, that the salvation of Israel were come out of Zion, when the Lord bringeth back the captivity of His people. Jacob shall rejoice and Israel shall be glad." And we know that God's people are the nation of Israel, and He's going to bring them out of captivity. And that's a lot of what the book of Revelation is about, isn't it? Because in I don't know if you remember in the book of Romans, I think it's chapter 9, where it says that the church, one of our purposes is to make Israel jealous. Because right now, God, His favors toward us, He gives grace, by grace we're saved through faith, right? And that not of ourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. So we have been saved by His grace, and so that's making Israel jealous. And in this tribulation period, this time to come. And so my point here was just that this is the most talked about time in all of the Bible. This thing of the tribulation period. We said there's nearly 300 prophecies about His first coming, and there's like nearly 5,000 about His second coming. And so all these things were fulfilled in His first coming, and we know they're going to be fulfilled in His second coming. And so this part of this book of Revelation, and that's what the word, we're calling this series Revealing Jesus. So when how many know what the full name of the book of Acts is? What is the full name of the book of Acts? Pam Anderson, I bet you know.
Well, not right off
the end, but
no? Probably.
It's called The Acts of the Apostles. Well, really, the full name of the book of Revelation is the book of the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's where we get the word apocalypse. I think it's the revealing is what that word means. So the full name, so we're calling this series Revealing Jesus. We're a little over halfway through. We're almost 40 weeks into it. And it says here in verse 1 that Pat read that he saw another sign. And we highlighted this again. We've done it before because it says in 1 Corinthians that the Jews require a sign. So when John sees this sign in heaven, it's great and marvelous, and he sees these seven angels. And I thought this was a pretty good picture of them. And they're on this sea of glass, and it says it's mingled with fire. Is that in this? I think it's the next verse. So, somebody read verse 2 for us, 15:2.
And I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and that had gotten the victory over the peace, and over his image, and over his mark, and over his name stand on the sea of glass, having the marks of God.
Yeah, and I was going to play a little video of a lady playing a harp, and we think about being in heaven and playing harps, and that doesn't sound appealing maybe, but you know, it does sound beautiful. And but I gave you some examples of like David playing a stringed instrument and how it soothed King Saul, and some people even prophesied on harps, and it was a part of temple worship. But this sea of glass that it mentions here, look back at chapter 4. I believe that same sea of glass was there. Where is that at? I don't think I put it on there, did I? 4:6.
And before the throne were there was a sea of glass like unto crystal, and in the midst of the throne and round about the four beasts will rise before the throne.
Good job, Jason. How do you find that? You're amazing.
Thank you.
Some of this, and I know I gave you a verse from King's reference, but this is kind of a split section of maybe what Solomon's temple looked like. And you can see, yeah, you can see my arrow, but you can see this brazen laver, and it was called a sea. It was a sea. And he even had 10 other smaller ones that I think, you know, the priest would maybe get water out of the sea to put in there, the 10 other. Anyway, so there's like 11 of these brazen lavers under Solomon. And just like there were 11 true disciples that, you know, we know Judas fell. And then we also said, and I like this picture, and we don't know exactly how things look, but if you picture, you know, us down here on planet Earth, and the first heaven around us being the atmosphere where the birds fly, and the second heaven where the sun, the moon, and the stars are, we know that the third heaven is where it mentions it twice in our Bible. And it's called the Mount Zion, the city of the great king, the heavenly congregation, and the heavenly Jerusalem. But right before this is this deep, or this sea of glass. And if you've ever, probably even today, we could all drive to a lake and it would be like glass, probably. It'd be a frozen, and that's why how Job described that this deep is frozen. And so we think that what John is seeing here is he's seeing this twice in the book of Revelation. He's seeing this sea of glass, and there's these people that had God's mark on them and the number of His name, and they've got harps, and so they're in heaven now. And he sees these seven angels with these seven cups. And my teaching point down here, I use this to highlight the number seven. I've got a list of, I think, a little over 100 mentions of the number seven in the Bible. I think I told you there was 800 in the book of Revelation, but that's wrong. I think there's almost 800 times there's sevens in the Bible. And I think there's a, I want to say 20 or 30 in the book of Revelation, but if you look at the teaching point on the bottom of your front page, these seven vials represent the condensed judgment on this earth at the time just preceding the second coming of Jesus Christ. And I think I got these notes from Brian on this teaching point. He says, though we will be looking at an itemized list of events, I believe it is likely these events will happen simultaneously within the span of hours or days, not weeks or months. And so the number seven shows us divine or spiritual perfection. So I had you put perfection in your blank. And perfection in the Bible just means complete. We're complete in Him. So seven shows divine or spiritual perfection or completeness. On the seventh day, God completed His work creating the heavens and earth. Seven is the second most used number in the Bible behind the number one. Seven is used over 700 times in the Bible, and seven was the most sacred number of to the Hebrews. I think they would even say that they would seventh something. It was like a promise or something. They would, and I think it's where the name Sabbath and seven are connected. And so in Revelation, I listed some of these. We find seven churches, seven seals, seven trumpets, seven vials, seven dooms, seven new things, seven spirits, seven candlesticks, seven stars, seven lamps, seven horns, seven eyes, seven thunders, seven heads, seven angels, seven plagues, and seven mountains. And there's also seven blessings. And if we got time, let's look these up. Let's just all look them up together. These seven blessings. And if you want to hold your place here and just look at chapter 1, we'll all look at these together. Look at 1:3, and somebody read Revelation 1:3.
Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand.
Yeah, so they're just a blessing just for reading the book of Revelation. So that's we're blessed just to read this today. And now jump over to chapter 14. What is 14? I've got 1 and 3. I don't know what I was thinking there.
I think it's 13.
Oh, maybe it's 13. Okay. Yeah, somebody read 13. Thank you.
And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them.
That would have been a good verse to put on Amita's card. Blessed are they which die in the Lord. What's the next one there? 16:15. Who wants to read that one? Julie, you got it?
Yeah. And he gathered them together into a place called, in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon.
16:15.
Yeah. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watches and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame.
Yeah, so there's a blessing for being on watch. And Christ, he comes as a thief. Christ is not a thief, but he comes as, in the sense that he's really taking what's his, isn't he? He's stealing away his people. He's coming as a thief. So we're blessed if we watch and we keep pure, so that we're not ashamed. And there's another place there. There's several places in the Bible where shame is connected with nakedness. Just like Adam and Eve, after they sinned, it says they were ashamed. Go to 19:9 now. Kevin or Trudy, you got those? 19:9.
Yeah.
I think Trudy's going to beat you.
Says, and he saith unto me, right, blessed are they which are called into marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, these are the true sayings of God.
Now, what's another word that we sometimes use for blessed? If you're blessed, what does that mean?
Happy.
You're happy. Yeah. You know, that Christ wrote, you know, the Beatitudes, blessed are they which mourn, for they shall be comforted. You know, you're blessed. You'll be happy. And Ecclesiastes even says that it's better to go into the house of mourning, for the wise will lay at the heart. And so, you know, blessed, Psalms is full of that. Blessed is the man that does this and not that. And so, these are things that we can be happy and blessed by. So that was the 19:9. Who's got 20 verse 6?
Blessed and holy is that hath part in the first resurrection, such the second death hath no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years.
So blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection, because the second death will have no power. And so the second death was being cast into the lake of fire. And have you guys ever seen, I think it was a bumper sticker, is like, if you're only born once, you're going to die twice. And if you're born twice, you only die once. Have anybody ever heard that? I like that. So if you're only born physically, you never get born spiritually. You're going to die physically and die spiritually. But if you're born again, you're only going to have to die once physically, but we're going to live forever, right? So these are all blessings. Who's got the 22:7? Is the next one there. These are all seven blessings in Revelation.
Behold, I come quickly. Blessed is he that keepeth the sayings of the prophecy of this book.
Yeah. So when you keep the sayings, another word for keeping is like obeying. And I think I seen this on Facebook where it's got like two lines of people, and there's a lot of people that believe, and then there's only a few that obey, right? So but this person is blessed is in the keeping and believing, obeying the sayings of the prophecies of this book. And then 22:14 is the last blessing in Revelation. Who's got that one?
Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life and enter into the gates of the city.
And does anybody ever remember any other place in the Bible that talks about the tree of life? Where would it be found at?
Genesis.
Yeah, it's in Genesis, isn't it? So when we get to this place, I've got a list of things that start in Genesis and end in Revelation. So it's a little bit circular. I mean, you see the tree of life that Adam and Eve, they took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and then God put cherubims around that tree of life because he didn't want them partaking of that and be in a state of death forever. If they ate of the tree of life in their fallen state, so he had to protect it with his cherub. And so now we see this tree of life in Revelation. So anyway, these are the seven blessings of Revelation. Any thoughts or comments on those? Before we finish, I kind of abbreviated today's study a little bit. But on the back of your page, I guess this is where I had the sea of glass that Jason read from. And it was symbolized in the temple by the molten sea. That was the other. I was just really kind of intrigued that the Kings and Chronicles talked about this molten sea or this brazen sea of this laver. That was before the temple. And look back to chapter 15 now, where we're at. Revelation 15. And And we'll see this more next week, but look down at verse 8. 15:8 says, "And the temple was filled with the smoke from the glory of God." And you guys may remember, you know, when Moses, he got a vision of the true tabernacle in the heavens, and he made an earthly tabernacle. And remember, he appointed a guy named Bezalel, and Bezalel had a couple of helpers that were gifted in engraving, and all the people gave their gifts, and this was a very elaborate tabernacle. And it had these kind of an outer court, and then it had the inner court where the showbread and the seven-pronged candlestick and the altar of incense. And then in the holy place, it had behind the curtain, behind the veil, you know, the Ark of the Covenant with the mercy seat on top with the cherubs. And do you know when he finished that, it says that the temple, the tabernacle, was filled with smoke so that they couldn't even go in there and minister. It's like that's representing God's power. And we see that same thing right here. It's pretty wild, isn't it? I think of that. And do you know the exact same thing happens in 1 Kings chapter 8? Solomon dedicates the temple. You remember King David, he prepared all this gold and silver, and David kind of had a pattern, and he wanted to build this house for God, and God says, "No, you're a bloody man. You know, you've had all these wars," but he allowed David to prepare all these things so that when his son Solomon came in, that Solomon dwelt in a time of peace. And it was about 1,000 years before Christ. And so this is kind of a picture of the temple. And it had these two big columns with these chapiters on the top. There was actually two of them. It's got a split away here, you know. And he had it so ornate and covered with... when Angie and I first got married, she lived in Jacksonville, Florida. So we actually drove my brother's pickup to Jacksonville. And we brought it home with kind of a tarp over it. And one of my memories is, you know, we didn't get the little straps all hooked. So one of them it scratched my brother's pickup, and he was mad. But anyway, so we drove back with all of Angie's possessions in the back of a pickup. But while we were in Jacksonville, we went to St. Augustine's. It's one of the oldest cities in the USA. And in St. Augustine's then, there was a Ripley's Believe It or Not. And you've heard of those, and it used to be a show. But what I remember about it, back in this kind of corner area, you know, we're looking through it, and they've got, you know, the amazing, you know, strong man and all these weird human things. But then it's got a little placard that says that if King David's wealth was translated into our economy now, which we got married in 82, it would be worth about $7 trillion in 82, which, you know, that was like our country's deficit at the time. It's over $30 trillion now. But anyway, so this my point is, this is just very elaborate. This is wealth, and the kings of the earth are, I mean, it's a theocracy. It's really God's kingdom on earth. And so that was at Israel's apex under Solomon, and just how ornate it was. And well, I think what my point was there, at the end of 1 Kings 8, after Solomon's done praying, it says the smoke filled the temple. It's the same thing as we're seeing here in Revelation. That's my whole story there, was how that this smoke filled, and so they just knew God's presence was there with this smoke. And so I wanted to kind of give you that backstory before we finish next week. But somebody read verses 3 and 4 for us of chapter 15. We're back at Revelation 15, verse 3 and 4.
And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, "Great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. Who shall not fear thee, O Lord, and glorify thy name? For thou only art holy, and all nations shall come and worship before thee, for thy judgments are made manifest."
Mm-hmm. Amen. So we've got this song of Moses in verse 3. And I gave you a few references. This was in, I think next week we'll do this. I want to really look at Moses with you, because, you know, in verse 1 it talked about these vials full of plagues, and here it's mentioning Moses again. We know Moses, God used him to deliver Israel out of Egypt using these plagues, and some of these seven plagues are similar to the 10 plagues on Egypt. And so we're going to look at some of the Song of Moses, and there's a few times in the Bible that song is mentioned. Some of them, you know, we're going to sing a new song. You might not. Some of the songs in the Bible are not. We don't have the words to, but Moses' song, there's some things that are very prophetic about it. So I had you put the word prophetic in your last verse. I don't know if I spelled that right, maybe. It's pretty close there. My teaching point is God designed Moses' song. There's either two or three songs of Moses in the Bible, and it's to be joyous and also prophetical. In fact, look at, we got a minute, look at Exodus 15. If you remember, you know, Israel came out of Egypt by the blood of the Lamb, and even then, Pharaoh and his armies chased after them, and you remember they were all drowned in the Red Sea? Look at Exodus 15. And somebody read Exodus 15:1 if they would.
Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord, and spake, saying, "I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider have been thrown into the sea."
Yeah, so you can just tell by that verse. He's talking about Pharaoh and the armies and the horses and the chariots. They died in the Red Sea, but do you see how it's prophetic? Because, you know, when we studied, I think it's Revelation 6, we talked about the four horsemen. You know, the white horse comes in and peaceably. And the red horse and the pale horse and the black horse, and the pale one was translated as being green. And I thought Brother TJ sent this to me not too long ago, but Pope Leo was given a white horse by I think that's the France prime minister or something, and so that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
That's an Arabian.
Yeah, it's a good eye. It's Arabian horse, and seemed like I had maybe. No, maybe not one more. I think this picture was just this sea of glass again, and those people that.
Harpers.
Yeah, they're playing the harp. So these represent, you know, the 144,000 that are in heaven, those that didn't take the mark of the beast. But I gave you several references about the horse and the rider. So it's historically about Pharaoh and his armies, but there's some doctrinal teachings about prophecy there. relating to the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And so I think I'm going to hold up there just a little bit early. And next week we'll talk about these last four verses, but we'll also get into, I want to look at Moses a little bit more, and we'll break down a little bit Exodus 15. Because the thing about this Song of Moses is that Israelites are all singing praise to God for His deliverance from Pharaoh, the type of the Antichrist, and they're just on the outside of the Red Sea. So, you know, we're talking about this sea of glass. They're looking at the Red Sea. They're singing this song of Moses. And they're joyous just to be out of captivity. So God has led His people out of captivity and given them freedom from the bondage of slavery. And so those are things to be thankful for us too. If you've been saved and you're not in bondage, then we should be thankful. And so that leads in good. We're going to go into the main service now and sing praises. The more you lead others, that's good.
And the more blessings that you get.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good, Tracy. Well, let's close in prayer today and take a minute to meet.